This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, class was in session for our nation's military this week, but the subject wasn't how to win wars or defend freedom. It was preparing the military for open transgenderism, which begins July 1st. Oklahoma Congressman and retired Army officer Steve Russell is here in just a moment. And everyone waits for the Senate to move forward on the House-passed American Health Care Act. But in the meantime, House conservatives are weighing in with their Senate counterparts, telling them the pro-life majority in the House of Representatives has, quote, reached consensus that any health care legislation must abide by the overarching principle that abortion is not health care, end quote. Colorado Congressman Doug Lamborn, who spearheaded the letter, joins me a little later here on Washington Watch. Also, a federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit against a pastor that claimed he violated international law by preaching about biblical morality. But in dismissing the case, the judge, in a highly unethical way, littered his opinion with a tirade against the pastor. Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel explains here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Just a little while ago, yesterday, we talked extensively about Congressman Steve Scalise back from a home state of Louisiana, former colleague of mine in the House. He was in more surgeries today. He is still listed in critical condition, so I would encourage you to continue to pray for him and his family. Extensive damage done by the bullet wound from yesterday's shooting here. By the way, the ball game will go on tonight between the Republicans and the Democrats here at the stadium outside of D.C. All right, the Army is now holding mandatory transgender sensitivity training for officers, non-commissioned officers, and civilians. Now, this is part of the Pentagon's attempt to create a welcoming environment for transgenders. With us now is Congressman Steve Russell. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Oklahoma and serves on the Armed Forces Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's always good to be with you.
You've expressed concern over the Department of Defense moving forward with this policy, having not really evaluated the impact it would have on readiness.
Well, it assumes several things. One, there's no clear criteria even for the definitions of the things that they're trying to purport. Also of great concern is that it assumes that the rights of conscience of the overwhelming majority of military commanders, military physicians, and lawyers are no longer protected. And it forces a detrimental, confusing, and military readiness weakening construct on the very people required to defend our republic.
Well, both the Army and the Marine Corps are trying to push the deadline back by as much as 2 years, although the Navy has already accepted the July 1 date. What's the sense of, I know you've kind of pulled together and leading a Warriors Caucus in Congress. What's the sense of Congress? Are they going to encourage this administration to listen to the military leaders as they said they would, or are they going to push forward with this policy?
Well, we have not had folks want to come forth to fight the issue. It has been one of those things where it was very hastily done in the last administration. It was forced under Secretary Carter during his tenure. These training vignettes that they have and the proposed training policy are very, very problematic on moral conscience. This is a concern to all Americans, Tony, because our taxes are being asked to be used to not only further this, but also do the surgeries, medical treatments, transitioning protocols. Let me give you an example of vignette number six. Here's the vignette. A soldier has completed Army gender transition from female to male as indicated in the department enrollment system. The soldier has not did not have a sex reassignment surgery and recently stopped taking male hormones in order to try and start a family. today, the soldier approached his commanding officer to discuss his newly confirmed pregnancy. This is so fraught with confusion. And the other major concern is, what on earth does this have to do with readiness of the defense of our republic? And how did we get to this type of ground where we are requiring your tax dollars and mine to not only promote this, but to have it so confusing to commanders? And me, as a former battle commander, commander of 1,000 soldiers, a task force in Iraq, I've served in combat in Afghanistan and the Balkans. This is something that will really cause a lot of confusion and problems for commanders, and it does nothing to promote our military in readiness. Nothing at all.
Well, in fact, I would think it would hinder readiness when you look at
it. Absolutely would hinder, and several of these vignettes, as you go through this proposed policy, it says that commanders are given authority to make determinations on whether or not a soldier would be deployable based upon where they're at in this supposed chain of transitioning. Okay, so here's another vignette. I decide I don't want to deploy to combat. I state that I'm suffering from gender dysphoria, which there is no criteria available for commanders to even know what this means. And then I'm in a trick bag where I have to make some determination based upon some social ideological agenda that the vast majority of the military is not focused on. They're focused on readiness and combat readiness and the defense of our republic. And now you've got a construct where soldiers who don't want to deploy can throw this monkey wrench in the machinery, and you're underwriting it with your tax dollars.
In addition to that, Congressman Russell, we have a military that has been shrunk to almost pre-World War II manpower in terms of resources.
Actually worse. Let me explain. Okay. 180 million souls in 1940. If you do the proportion per capita, we have a 30% smaller military than we had then.
Okay, we take those numbers, we look at that, but then you add to that that means every one of those individuals is essential for the military to perform its mission. So when you have someone who's transitioning, they're non-deployable, that's a billet that is filled by them. You cannot fill it with somebody else, but you cannot use them. So you're not going to be able to operate at full strength.
Well, and that is correct, and it also creates a weakening of that particular trained soldier or warrior or whatever it might be, in that they have vital training, and now due to whatever it is that this process becomes, with hormone therapy or with the surgeries that your tax dollars are paying for in violation of your rights and conscience, that will lower their ability to perform their assigned missions, even were they able to deploy.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, my guest, former combat officer, retired from the United States Army. Congressman, when you asked the question, how did we get here? Well, I think that was a rhetorical question. We got here because of Barack Obama's social engineering that he put in the military, and unfortunately we had military officers that allowed it to take place. That's my words. That's my observation of watching the last 8 years. But there's a way out, and I think it starts with this policy here, this administration, the Secretary of Defense. Secretary Mattis can put a stop to this based upon you have two branches of service that are primarily responsible for putting boots on the ground, the Army and
That's
the Marine
correct.
Corps, saying, hey, we need more time to evaluate this. You have members of
they
Congress saying the same thing.
They absolutely do need more. I mean, I'm looking at this as a combat veteran, a former infantry commander from the United States Army. if I were presented with one of these vignettes or scenarios, it would be very, very confusing. And it's not because I was an infantryman and I can't figure it out. You know, I have a high degree of education. I'm a member of Congress. I think I've got the mental capacity to try to work through very difficult situations, having led soldiers in battle. This has created a problem that we do not need to be wasting our time or our tax dollars. What a soldier chooses to do on his or her time off of the base is their private business. But you do not make it something where we have a social engineering construct that is underwritten by your tax dollars, violates the rights of moral conscience of military physicians, military commanders, and many of their co-serving soldiers. Where are their rights, Tony?
Right. Well, there was a time not too long ago when I was in the Marine Corps that what you did on your own time off the base was still of concern.
Well, subject to
your
good order and discipline, you're correct.
Right. Yeah. But a lot of that has been thrown out the window to accommodate this new agenda. Any movement do you see from the Department of Defense, from Secretary of Defense, that this policy may be suspended?
This policy was created not by a law that we passed in a defense authorization. It was done by a decision at the department level. It needs to be corrected at the department level. You know, people are trying to look to Congress saying, well, why did you let this happen, and what are you doing to prevent it? This was done by executive direction to the former Secretary of Defense, Secretary Carter, and it needs to be extended for all of the reasons that I just mentioned, and that can be done by President Trump, that can be done by Secretary Mattis, and the service secretaries and the service chiefs, they absolutely need the time. None of this has been properly evaluated. And even if it were, what were you to do about the absolute vast majority of people's rights of conscience?
Right.
We have pledged as warriors to uphold the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States, and we are violating a great many of those and a vast majority of those that serve in uniform.
Yeah, you made reference to the training that has been, the training manual that's out there, and there are no provisions for the rights of conscience. In fact,
none.
You made reference to issues regarding male pregnancy, but there's also issues there regarding females. If they don't like to shower with males who are transitioning, they have no say in who uses the same facility.
They will have no say. In fact, the opposite. Commanders are told that they will make no special accommodation one way or the other for one group or the other, that they can choose to make certain equal type of accommodations where it is the same for everybody, but they will not, again, we see the vast majority of folks, you know, that their rights no longer matter under this this type of twisted policy that has managed to find its way into a, it's not been officially released. We did manage to get a copy of it, and it is very disturbing for commanders.
All right, Congressman Steve Russell, as always, great to have you on the program. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, take care. Folks, this has to stop. If we're concerned about national security, it will. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking about members of the House taking a stand for pro-life policies. That's next.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters. Hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi. All throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique, 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
To Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Hey, by the way, check out the website. There on the website, information about the Alaskan cruise coming up this summer, the end of July, 1st of August. Still have a few cabins, just a few. If you'd like to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, here's breaking news. Coming out of the White House. 17 years after the year 2000 bug came and went, the federal government will finally stop preparing for it. This is the real thing, folks. The Trump administration announced Thursday that it would eliminate dozens of paperwork requirements for federal agencies, including an obscure rule that requires them to continue providing updates on their preparedness for a bug that afflicted some computers at the turn of the century. Government's always on top of things. It was just 17 years ago. You know what, though? Here's the good news. They're going back and they're cleaning up some of this stuff, and they're trying to cut waste and eliminate it and be more efficient. I mean, you know, $19 trillion in the hole. Yeah, I guess we should be. We should eliminate unnecessary paperwork. And by the way, this goes right back to our previous topic about the military and transgenderism, and that all of the on average, you know, for someone who is going to transition, that's about $70,000. And this policy that's being put in place will allow people to come into the military to not only get that type of treatment for themselves, but for their dependents, and even children under the age of 18, according to this new policy. This was put in place by the former Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, who was advocating for this stuff. And again, as Congressman Russell pointed out, Congress didn't do this. Anyway, that's one way to save some money. All right, 70 members of the U.S. House have signed on to a letter asking the GOP leadership in the Senate to ensure, quote, our pro-life priorities are included in any health care legislation they draft to replace the Affordable Care Act. The congressman who spearheaded the letter was our good friend Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado Springs. He represents the 5th Congressional District. He's one of our strong pro-life leaders on Capitol Hill. And in fact, he's right now, I think he's pulling into the ballgame there between the Republicans and Democrats, and he joins us by phone. Doug, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to talk with you and your great listeners.
Well, it's good to have you on the program, and I want to thank you for spearheading this effort, getting 69 of your colleagues to join you and sending this letter communicating to the Senate the non-negotiable. So tell our listeners the essence of this letter.
Okay, when the House passed the the Affordable Health Care Act and sent it over to the Senate, we had very clear provisions, Tony, that no money was going to go for any abortion provider. In fact, we said rather than go to an abortion provider, in order to protect women's health, we would let that money go to community health clinics that do provide services for women but do not provide abortions. And there are about 14,000 of those in the country versus, let's say, Planned Parenthood, for instance, only 650. So it's a 20-to-1 ratio. But the key point here, Tony, is that money is fungible. If you don't expressly cordon it off, the other side will find a way to use it for abortion. And abortion is not health care.
Yeah, that was something you made very clear in the letter, and that's something that has been stated over and over by the pro-life majority. And that should be underscored that in the House of Representatives, that it is a pro-life majority. What are you hearing from the Senate? I was actually up on the Senate side this morning meeting with some senators, but what are you hearing as it pertains to the defunding of Planned Parenthood?
I'm getting the idea that it is definitely with a majority of the Republicans, but not necessarily all of the Republicans. And the vote margin is so close. They only have 52 votes to work with out of 100. And if you lose even three, and if you only lose two, then 50-50 tie, Mike Pence, who's a great pro-life supporter, can break the tie. But if you lose three or more, you lose something. You lose a provision. So it's going to be nip and tuck, Tony.
Congressman Lamborn, part of the message, I think, sent by the letter is making very clear these non-negotiables. And quite frankly, it only passed by, one vote either way would have changed the outcome of the vote in the House. And so when you look at that fact, if you take any of these pro-life provisions that are taken out, including the defunding of Planned Parenthood, there's no way it passes again if it comes back in the House.
Well, then we're in a horrible position because we've also vowed to repeal Obamacare, and we've been doing that, making that promise for 7 years. So I hope things don't fall apart at this point, Tony. It's definitely a quandary we're in.
Yeah, I would agree because I think that if the Republicans, after nearly a decade of pledging to eliminate Obamacare, fail to do so now that they have the House and the Senate and the White House, I believe it could be a path back to the minority if they do not repeal it.
Well, and that's true. Now, maybe the Senate will get the votes, number one, or they will have a strategy in place to finish defunding Planned Parenthood in the near future, this only being part of the process. I don't know. I'm going to have to hear what they present to us, and it's still up in the air, Tony.
All right. Congressman Doug Lamborn, as always, great to talk with you. Enjoy the ball game tonight.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you.
Okay. Colorado Springs Congressman Doug Lamborn. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. A good guy. I've known him since he was in the Colorado legislature. He was the president pro tem in the Senate back when I was in the Louisiana legislature. Look, I've communicated very clearly to the Republican leadership in the Senate that it's a non-negotiable because we aggressively helped pass the bill with the defunding and the pro-life provisions in the bill. If those come off, not only are we not for it, we're against it. If this expands abortion in any form or fashion, we can't be for that. And unfortunately, I do think it would be a path toward the minority for the Republicans. So they better get it right. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with Matt Staver from the Liberty Institute. You won't want to miss this next story. We're coming right back.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we have a new prime interest rate. It's 1%. Boy, we haven't seen 1% in a very, very long time. Many of you might know or remember for about 4 years, I've been talking about Fed raising interest rates. I think it's very, very important that we have a strong currency, even if it means a little bit of a downtick or a little bit of an issue on the short term. I think a strong monetary system and a strong dollar by the world's largest economy is very important for the long-term health of America. And it looks like we're headed a little bit in that direction, but it looks like the markets are reacting somewhat negative to that. Certainly, it would have been a very negative thing for the markets had they not raised interest rates. But I think there are some concerns about the Fed's conversation of unwinding their balance sheet. Remember, the Federal Reserve has $4.5 trillion of America's debt. That far surpasses China's $1.1 trillion of debt that they hold. Now, I have long been an advocate for an exit strategy by the Fed. And apparently, they do now have an exit strategy. I like the exit strategy. It is going to be slow. It is going to be deliberate, and it's going to be extremely predictable and transparent. It's the way it should be, and I like that idea. The one thing that is concerning traders today is going to be some signs of consumer demand dwindling a bit, and that may be the biggest issue of all.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, last week, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit filed against a pastor, Pastor Scott Lively, winning a summary judgment against the foreign LGBT activist. It's the group was called Sexual Minorities Uganda, which sued Lively for sharing his biblical views on homosexuality during 3 visits to Uganda in 2002 and 2009. Now, while the judge, his ruling, put an end to this lawsuit attempting to silence the pastor, the presiding judge improperly littered his order with a prolonged tirade against Pastor Lively, distorting his Christian views and the biblical teaching on human sexuality. But he's being represented by Matt Staver, president of Liberty Counsel, who joins us now. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
All right. Was that correct in how I set that up?
Oh, it's absolutely correct. What the judge did in 2017, dismissing the case because he has no jurisdiction, he should have done in 2013 when we asked him, because that's when the U.S. Supreme Court issued a unanimous decision saying that you cannot use this federal law known as the Alien Tort Statute to allow a foreign citizen to sue a U.S. citizen in the United States alleging not U.S. law or foreign law, but some international law. Pretty cut and dry. We asked him to dismiss it then. He refused. It was the only court in the country that did not dismiss a case using the Alien Tort Statute. We know because we followed all the cases, and we know why, because this guy is a very strong advocate of the LGBT agenda. So he put us through 4 years of intense litigation, 100 depositions, 40,000 pages, and finally came to the point where he had to be before going to trial, and he had to recognize that he didn't have jurisdiction. End of the story, you should say.
So
but
he just...
Then
but
he littered his order.
Well, before we get to that part, so let me be clear on this. He was just basically dragging this thing out. He could have
That's
dispensed
right.
with this a long time ago.
Yeah, back in 2013, unanimous Supreme Court decision. We asked for the case to be dismissed, pretty cut and dry. Many other cases, even mega corporations that had been sued using the Alien Tort Statute, they all got dismissed across the country. Only one case did not, and that was our case.
So it's kind of like judicial harassment because this runs up cost and uncertainty and everything else like that. Okay, so that aside, when he finally got around to doing what he should have done 4 years ago, 3 years ago, he issues an order, but takes a shot at your client.
Yeah, and here's the more egregious thing. He issues an order saying that he has no jurisdiction. That's like saying you walked into the wrong court. There's no law that you have that you can bring into this courtroom. Case over. You may have your personal opinion, but that's it. But no, he goes beyond it. He says, I have no jurisdiction. He's upset that the Supreme Court made the ruling 2013. Then he goes on to say several things. Number one, he says he believes that Pastor Scott Lively committed crimes against humanity. I mean, that is a huge leap, Tony, as you know. Crimes against humanity, that's what dictators and despots do when they commit genocide. And what did Scott Lively do? He spoke three times in Uganda. He actually moderated the Ugandans on the issue of the whole LGBT law. That's it. Then he goes on to call him a crackpot, he calls him a bigot, and he gives him all kinds of childish names in a federal court order. So as a result of that, we have done something in this case that we've never done in the history of Liberty Counsel, and that is we have appealed a victory. Most people think, well, how can you appeal when you win? Well, there's some good case law out there that says if a judge litters the order with things that are prejudicial, harmful, and have no reason as part of the disposition of the case, you can ask a federal court to strike all that prejudicial, nonsensical language. So, yes, the case is dismissed. Yes, we won. But we're not going to walk away and let him slander our client when he has, number one, no factual basis, and number two, no legal basis. So we've asked the Court of Appeals to strike all of his prejudicial, frankly bigoted, unfactual language that he littered against our client and laced his order. It is a vitriolic attack on our client. We're just not going to allow it to happen.
So will that go to the circuit court, the appellate court level?
That's right. It'll go to the Court of Appeals. The only issue there is take that order and basically scrub it of all these things that he should not have said. And it's very clear because he cannot rule on the merits. He cannot have a personal opinion that he puts in the ruling because he can't even get to the merits. It's like he has no jurisdiction
to say
anything other than to dismiss it.
We're almost out of time, Matt, but is this one of those categories where Congress should look at a judge like that? Is this an impeachable offense that this guy is showing himself to be irresponsible on the bench?
Yes, it is. And in fact, this is the same judge who said that judges, and this is his words, are, quote, unelected legislators of humanity, close quote. That's what he thinks judges and that's what he thinks his role is. That's not the role of a judge, and Congress ought to take some action against him. And certainly I think they have good grounds to do so.
Interesting. We'll be watching that closely. Matt Staver, as always, great to talk with you, my friend.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. We had something very similar in the case involving the shooter that came into to FRC, who was convicted of domestic terrorism. First time that happened in D.C. since the law was passed after 9/11. And the judge, very similar, very liberal in his bent, even though finding the guy guilty of terrorism, went on a tear against us. I mean, these judges, I don't know who they think they are. All right, when we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines to hear from you on this Thursday afternoon. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sites we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see, you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. All right, here's what I'm going to go back to the conversation we had with Congressman Russell from Oklahoma, who, by the way, it was his unit that actually captured Saddam Hussein. He has a book written about it. Good guy. Anyway, this is a major break from precedent. I mean, it's the military's largest branch, and this is in the training that went out. This was in the Army in particular, but it's going through all the branches. But this is what, in the training, what they were telling. They were warning female soldiers to expect biological men in their showers. Now, it was if a male is transitioning, I should get all those things out there, transitioning to a female, but yet he has male genitalia. They can't say anything. In fact, officers, as you heard from the commanders, as you heard from Congressman Russell, cannot make special accommodations. Now, here's the question I have for you. Do you think this will affect recruitment? Will it affect how you encourage maybe your children or young people you have influence with to enter the military? In fact, I would like to hear from some young people who may be about that age of 18, 19, 17, in that age that recruiters look to. As a female, would that be a hindrance to you, thinking that your privacy could well be violated? And given all, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. So how do you think this is going to affect recruitment? And how will this affect how you advise your children, grandchildren, others that you influence about military service? I mean, no, 866-372-7234. Now, on top of this, what the military has seen in recent years under the Obama era of these sexualized policies, there has been a major increase in sexual assaults. I mean, should we be surprised? But what was fascinating, what they don't want to deal with, is that many of them are male-on-male sexual assaults. Our military has been sexualized. Our culture has been sexualized. And then we wonder why we have all these issues. I mean, folks, come on. I mean, when you normalize what is abnormal, and you wonder why you have these things happening. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Virginia, where Scott is on the line. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a father of two teenagers, one boy, one girl. And in the past few years, actually about 5 years or so, I've dissuaded my kids from thinking about going into the military, especially my daughter, because of this, because of all the activism and the fact that her safety would be in jeopardy. Just can't. I love our country. I even serve at the VA 2 days a week, and I love our vets. The problem is I would not be a responsible parent if I put my children into a position where they have a higher likelihood of being victims of sexual assault.
Yeah. It's a difficult spot for parents to be in, because I'm like you, Scott. I mean, I'm a Marine veteran. I have five children, three girls, two boys. And I'm raising my kids, and they're moving into adulthood, and they're I would have a hard time, and I've actually had the conversation with some of my daughters. I have a hard time with my daughter serving unless there is a correction in the policies of this military, and that's why I'm waiting to see what the Trump administration does. Is they do a course correction? It's even difficult for thinking of my sons. But, I think they're better equipped to handle what they may be faced with. But it's a sad commentary when patriots and look at our nation's military historically, and disproportionately the ranks of our military have been filled with individuals from conservative, primarily more conservative states with more conservative ideology, orientation, and a strong spiritual component. Now, I'm not saying they're all evangelicals. I'm just saying that is a strong part of our nation's military. Of course, we shouldn't be surprised by that, because it's the Judeo-Christian ethic that causes men and women to volunteer to go into harm's way for others. Scott, thanks so much for the call. All right, let's go on to Missouri, where Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I'm currently serving in the military, and this policy that came out, and actually I heard about it first about 2 years ago, and I went to a sergeant major that was someone I respect pretty highly, and I asked him about what he thought about it, and he said that he's ending his career, and he's not going to have to deal with it, but that we're going to have to make a decision on what we're going to do about it. And it's tough for me, because the beginning of those, I'll bear true faith and allegiance to the U.S. Constitution. I don't feel like we're even abiding by what we're taking an oath to come into the military in the first place.
Good point. So have you, Jim, had to undergo this training yet?
Not only did I have to go through the training, I had to give the training, which is also very concerning for me.
Oh, wow.
And I was specifically directed not to make any snide remarks and keep any of the joking when I gave it to a minimum. And I actually got it from another fairly strong Christian that I know, and he was very stressed throughout the whole about 45 minutes he had to give up. So,
well, let me ask you about that, Jim, because this is very significant in that you have men and women, as I was just talking about earlier, there are a lot of Christians in our military, are there not?
There are. Yes.
And so this is a dilemma. What you were in a position of leadership, you are required to instruct your subordinates on these new policies which you as a Christian have some difficulty with, and even people who are not necessarily Christians have issues with this when it comes to the mission of the military. But you can't say anything, and you're not allowed to sidestep it. You are forced to be the vehicle through which this goes.
Exactly. And it's just so disconcerting. I'm getting to a point where I'm getting close to where I can retire, and I don't feel like I'm going to continue serving because of the way that just the Army in general is going. It's very disappointing.
Let me ask you before I let you go, Jim, and I appreciate you calling in. From a practitioner level, from those who are in the military, are you seeing any changes under the new administration? I mean, I know there's things happening because I'm working at the policy level, but have they reached the practical level of where the men and women who serve are impacted by them?
So what I've noticed is there's usually about a year or two lag before everything kind of trickles down, just like this policy, the transgender policy, that the training was based off of a memorandum that was put out in the beginning of 2016, and we didn't actually have to start giving it until just a couple months ago. So I haven't really seen, as far as on the operational level, any big changes right now.
Okay. Right.
Obviously, with this past administration, we went from the don't ask, don't tell to now openly serving homosexuals are perfectly acceptable, and then now the transgender. So it's just, but that didn't happen until 2012. So there was a couple years before they even took the don't ask, don't tell policy out.
Yeah, and by the time this stuff gets down, these policies are in place, and then the effect is seen. It's almost irreversible. Jim, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And thank you for your service to our country.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys bringing up this issue. It really means a lot to me.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim. 866-372-7234. Going to get to a few more phone calls here. Let's go to Jim in Oklahoma. Jim, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I'm a 60-year-old regular Army vet, and, you know, I've been watching this quite a while, and this has got to hurt and be damaging to military readiness, you know. What kind of military are we training up? I mean, we put the military in the field right now, we might be in trouble.
Well, I think we would be. I mean, especially if we had to... We are not capable of being able to operate in more than one theater right now. We're very stretched. And the morale, as you just heard from an active duty service member, the morale, people are looking at the clock, the calendar, to see when they can get out. So you're absolutely right, Jim.
Jesus is the answer, Tony. You got to get back to his way or else we're all doomed. And these people are being used by Satan, and they don't even know it, you know. And he's not going to do them no favors when they get where he wants them. That's all I got to say, Tony. Appreciate you letting me in today.
All right, Jim, thanks for calling. And let me just say what Jesus had to say. Jesus had to say something about this, okay? So what did Jesus have to say about it? Jesus, in Matthew chapter 19, talked about gender. He did. He talked about this issue, made it very clear. He said, have you not read from the beginning that God created them male and female? All right? So for those who only want to listen to read the red letters are very clear on this issue. And so there's no room. I mean, this is just, it's pure insanity. It really is. All right, I'm going to try to work in one more phone call here. Let's go to Nelson in Texas. Nelson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. All right, I'm going to try to work in one more.
Hey, turn your radio down. Go right ahead, Nelson. Nelson, you there?
Yes, I certainly am. How are you doing, Mr. Birkin?
I'm good, thank you.
Glad to be on the show. I think that all of us
as good patriots and as a good citizen and taxpayers, we ought to call our congressman and put a word on this. This nonsense is about to happen in July. It has to be stopped. Must be stopped. I am not paying tax dollars for my military to be trained on how to cope with somebody's confusion. I'm paying my taxes so they can be used and defend our country. As a former ex-military and currently working at the VA, like the other gentleman who spoke, I have not stopped serving. But this is enough is enough, and it is up to us to tell Congress, we elected you, you work for us, this is what we want done. It has to stop. Thank you, Tony, and blessings to you and all the listeners who are listening.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, Nelson. Thank you for your service to our country. And we never, that oath that we took to defend the Constitution, as General Boykin often reminds us, that oath never expires. Once you take that oath, you are committed to continuing to defend the Constitution, whether in uniform or not. This issue, as Congressman Russell pointed out, this was not done by an act of Congress. This was another one of those policies that was pushed by the Obama White House, the Obama administration. Ash Carter, who was an activist, an LGBT activist, pushed this thing through as he was headed out the door and the new administration was coming in. The Secretary of Defense, Secretary Mattis, can undo this. He's not done it. I know he's got a lot on his plate, but this is a cultural landmine, which will eventually, somebody's going to step on it. So it would be to his benefit to undo this. The president can tell him to undo it. He has not yet. We're hoping he will. We're working and trying to get the White House to understand the significance of this if it's allowed to stand. Now, I completely get that there are a lot of things happening in the world, a lot of things happening here domestically. But this is one of those things that once it goes into a place, it will not be reversed. And the impact upon our military readiness will be very, very significant. And nothing is irreversible per se, but in effect it would be. Once you'll have people lined up July 1st to sign up to come into the military as transgender. And once that happens, undoing this, I mean, it'd be like trying to close Pandora's box. All right, folks, sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls. For those holding, thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening, all of you. And thank you for being a part of the Washington Watch family. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, no matter if it's politically correct or not, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.